Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable. Welcome to our panel and open to discussion of issues in the news. And joining us for our panel this morning, WAMC's Alan Chartok, coffee in hand. Good morning, Alan.
Good morning, I think.
Yes. Albany journalism professor and investigative reporter Rosemary R. Mayo is here.
With Kleenex in hand.
Yay. Yes. Yeah. Are you drippy
cold
today?
Cold weather. Yeah. I'm drippy today.
Thanks for sharing.
We gave Rosemary the day off yesterday as we had our tribute for Pete Seeger, and it's great to have her back. And newsman Ray Graff joins us in the studio as well as he does most Wednesdays. Thank you very much, sir.
Is it real? Oh, I come on Wednesdays?
Yeah.
I didn't realize that.
Check your calendar. You'll notice a trend.
Remind me to take next Wednesday off.
Stop it. All right, let's talk about the news of the day, as we promised, and begin with the State of the Union address. We have been kind of teasing it for a couple of days, talking about what we expected out of the president, what we expected him to talk about. So here we are with the address presented last night, and kind of go around the room. But Rosemary, you watched it from start to finish. What did you think?
I thought it was a pretty good speech. I was struck by several things. You want to hear those now?
Or yeah.
Okay. Strike us.
Okay. First, on the day that the House passes a ridiculous bill to continue restrictions on abortion funding, he made a very impassioned plea for women's rights that brought a standing ovation. I thought that was great. We need that. I do think there is a war on women. I did not like the ending where he paid the great tribute to the young, very, very injured young man who did 10 tours of duty in our wonderful wars. I don't think we serve our troops by honoring them as heroes when, in fact, he was injured in a really ridiculous war that didn't accomplish anything. And third was the Republican responses. There were several of them. They offered absolutely no alternative while at the same time bashing Obama. And then the fourth observation is that how I'm one of the few people apparently in the country who actually watched the speech. The Times Union in Albany has a poll today of who watched and didn't watch, and 56% of the people polled, it's scientific but I don't remember the numbers, said, no, I didn't watch, I don't like that guy. Another 24% said there's better television on. I mean, wow, this is the president of the United States talking about what he'd like to see happen. That seems important to me.
I saw an interesting piece on NPR, the website. Actually, it was on our website, but it was an NPR piece yesterday about, you know, the old State of the Union
versus
messages
now. Yeah.
And how they were basically an affair for reporters and politicians and a smoke-filled room.
It actually was.
Now it's pomp and circumstance,
right.
And it's a big rah-rah show, and maybe people have just had a little
enough of
that.
It actually used to be a discussion. The president had a talk with Congress, and now, of course, Congress is just sort of ancillary to his presentation to a wider audience. And I thought he baited Congress yesterday, too. He didn't talk to them.
Well, you know, you and I have had that fight before, Rosemary. Mm-hmm. I mean, when he tries to talk to them, they don't talk back. And so your thing is, I think your message, and I'd never put words in your mouth as if I could, but
today.
Anytime. But you know, I think that he's tried. They don't respond, and he can't have it both ways. He did, of course, avoid the trap by saying he wanted to work with them, but at the same time, he said, "I'm going to do it on my own." Look, the American people don't like namby-pamby politicians. They like the Ronald Reagans. They like people who speak their minds and who are out there. And I think it was a sort of out there speech. I must admit, I wasn't awake while it was on, but I did see it this morning. Mm-hmm. And it was, you know, I think it was an aggressive talk, which I think people will like.
Yeah, some of the commentary sense, which I find interesting, is that it was a great talk, but it won't really. He will not really accomplish as much. And we've talked about this here before, trying to act on his own. You just simply can't do that. The Constitution is set up that the executive and the legislative branch have to work together for real meaningful change.
Well, what's he supposed to do? I mean, what is he supposed to do? He's going to go on there. The Republicans have announced their total opposition to whatever he wants. And so, you know, I don't see what his options are except to say, I'm going to go it alone in your face.
Now, he did that in 2011, basically said, I will go. If Congress doesn't act, I will act. not a lot really happened. So it could be perceived as perhaps that was a bluster or a bluff. We shall see as far as the executive actions go this time.
But what if you were him, Ray? Let me ask you to do this: is suspend your animation for a while, and put yourself into his spot. What would you have done in this speech?
Oh, I don't think it was a bad speech. I'm just saying.
No, I'm asking you what your approach would have been.
No, I think you have to play those cards. I agree with you. I mean, I think like you're limited, and it's like Scrabble. You know, you have so many letters. There's only one or two words you can play, and it seems like that's the.
How many cues do you have?
Right. Exactly.
You know, Ted Cruz came on and spoke later, a person I don't admire much, but I mean, I do believe in listening to criticism to see if there's something in there you can learn from it. And he said, yeah, you know, this president negotiates this way, calls a meeting of all the congressional leaders, and we go to the White House and he goes, okay, I'm not taking any compromise on this. That's not negotiating, and he's been turned off ever since.
Well, you know, Rosemary,
I think he will negotiate.
I think he does negotiate. I think he's already signaled, for example, on immigration reform that he will negotiate.
Interesting that you bring up immigration reform, because he spoke very, maybe a paragraph
briefly,
or two last night about immigration reform, and so he urged action. He said, quote, if we are serious about economic growth, it's time to heed the call of business leaders, labor leaders, faith leaders, and law enforcement and fix our broken immigration system. There would seem to be, at least in the back channels, some move on even the Republican side to get a deal done. However, everybody, when the president said that line, everybody got up. John Boehner did not. And what does that say?
I don't know. I mean, Boehner only got up
one time, and that was at the end when they were honoring the war hero. Where everybody
has got a problem. I mean, he clearly has to keep the dissident factions in his party, and they're not. And he's not going to want to turn around and say, "I stood up for a proposal." But I think you make a very good point, Ray, and that is if they are working closer on immigration reform, and if he only gives it a paragraph in the speech, then you can see that one and one makes two, that he doesn't attack when he's on the precipice of getting something done.
You may be onto something there, old man.
I think he didn't want to say anything that would break the deal. I agree with Alan on that. I think he was being careful.
The president said, the cold hard fact is that even in the midst of recovery, too many Americans are working more than ever just to get by, let alone to get ahead. So to take that position, and to take a message to show the very wide gap between the wealthy and the poor, you seem like you're on pretty safe ground there, and yet it's a really difficult road to go down.
Yeah.
For a lot of reasons. I mean, in terms of Democratic politics, congressional elections, if everybody who's in poverty or around poverty were to vote in a congressional election, Democratic Congresses without any question. But the truth of the matter is they don't. And as your economic circumstances go down, you're less likely to vote. We know this. So you have to send something out there. On the other hand, you now have a bad situation in which the middle class doesn't like to associate with the poor. So if you do too much for the poor and you're in politics and your base constituency that you're appealing to doesn't turn out, then the middle class may turn against you and you may lose the election. It's that simple, which is why when you talk about the 39 million people we've often talked about, who got put onto the rolls, there's very little mention of the word poor ever or doing that, because the middle class is saying, we don't really care about them. You know, that's a very bad conundrum.
I want to take a quick break. When I come back, I want to continue our conversation about the State of the Union. I also want to talk about the Republican response with specifically Kathy McMorris Rodgers and talk about that and that choice and the symbolism there. We'll be right back. We welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll be back after this short break.
Support for WAMC comes from Veterinary Emergency and Specialty Hospital, South Deerfield, Massachusetts, providing ophthalmology, surgery, and internal medicine services for dogs and cats, now offering laser eye surgery, VESHDeerfield.com, and Woodstock School of Art, Woodstock, New York, offering classes and workshops in drawing, painting, printmaking, sculpture, and more, tuition assistance available, all levels welcome, WoodstockSchoolOfArt.org.
Welcome back to our roundtable panel. We welcome your comments, roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. As Rosemary mentioned in our discussion about the State of the Union address, there were several responses. There was the official Republican response, which came from Representative Kathy McMorris Rogers of Washington State. She delivered the official Republican rebuttal. Republicans responded by blaming Mr. Obama for the country's economic problems, but the party's leaders avoided the language of last year's government shutdown and hoped to present what Kathy McMorris Rogers called a more hopeful Republican vision intended to appeal particularly to women in a midterm election year.
She's a very attractive candidate. I mean, somebody said, and I think they were right on CNN, that this is the face of a new potential Republican leader. Definitely, you know, intelligent, passionate. I liked her. Her response I did not find effective. She has a very compelling personal narrative. She talked about how she grew up in a family where she and her brother had to get up early in the morning to go pick apples because they were orchard growers. Mm-hmm. She then finds her way to Washington, from Washington State to Washington, D.C., you know, a rags-to-riches story. Dealing with her son, one of her four children, I think, has Down syndrome, and has doctors pronounced him, you know, just uneducable, and of course he's doing just great. And she did all of this with no government help. And I think that's just silly. The government programs that Obama espouses that she was trying to renege on are designed exactly to help the kind of people, the kind of family she grew up in. And there should be help for health issues like Down syndrome, absolutely. So, and she didn't offer one line. And instead of what Obama's doing, here's what I would do. If I heard one of those lines, I would have been
And yet, Rosemary, this is supposed to be the moderate voice in the Republican Party.
Exactly.
And because of Twitter and social media and Facebook, you had the other guys trotting out saying nothing doing, what?
Aren't these rebuttals in general, whether it's the state or the national, designed to be sort of generic? There really isn't a great deal of time to go into detail about your plans. In other words, just sort of this
But why not, Ray?
All the time, this general sort of...
Well, you have a State of the Union, you say, and you just say, well, the Republicans have planned to close the gap. Okay, but what are you going to do?
Yeah. I mean, I think... What do you mean they don't have
time?
Well,
it always comes down to the same thing, trickle down.
We knew days ago what Obama was going to be saying. There were no big surprises
couldn't
they craft something to say, here's our response?
Give me one response has been detailed for any of these, presidential or governor or
No, mostly in the last few years, they've like kind of exposed the weaknesses of people that the Republican Party mostly have wanted to push into national office. Remember Jindrell last year, Louisiana guy.
But I think it's a great point. Wouldn't it be politically astute to say, okay, this isn't working, and this is what we offer instead. But I think it also shows.
No, they do. They say we offer trickle down.
They don't have a plan. You're right.
Well, yeah, but they offer trickle down. They say if you leave everybody alone,
we'll get rich and then it'll help you.
Like the Rogers family did.
I thought it was great that they had the duck hunter up there in the audience. Republicans had your duck hunter.
Oh, yeah.
And then you see the divisions. Duck Dynasty guy.
Quack.
So then Senator Mike Lee of Utah delivered a speech on behalf of Tea Party activists, and Senator Rand Paul of Kentucky distributed his own remarks on Facebook, YouTube, and other social media. And they were not only criticizing the president, but criticizing other factions of the Republican Party. So there were several responses through.
Now, that would not have been possible several years ago.
Right. Exactly.
Because of
balkanization of the Republican Party. You're seeing the demise of the Republican Party's power if, in fact, it splinters like it looks like it's splintering.
Well, we could have balkanization of both parties. I mean, now we have this huge fight going on. I don't want to divert us, but between no matter what they say and no matter how many pictures they take together between Andrew Cuomo and Bill de Blasio, one guy's a progressive, de Blasio. The other guy is, I'm a purple.
Centrist.
I'm heading over towards, to the more conservative side. And this is a philosophical fight that's going on. Yeah.
Interesting that, and you've brought this up in years past, the Republicans have always found a way to circle the wagons at crunch time.
Exactly.
And
right.
Unite the message. And you always call the Democrats circular firing squad.
Well, I'm not the first who did that.
Is that tide turning? In other words, is that changing that equation?
We go in cycles. There's no question about it. But in the end, what is it all about? It's about the acquisition and maintenance of political power. That's what it's about.
One other thing, and I know I'm throwing out a large issue in just the minute that we have left, but I thought this was an interesting point that was made in the Times article. By the numbers, Mr. Obama has so far been restrained in his use of executive power. He signed just 168 executive orders, and the 147 he issued in his first term were the fewest of any president over a similar period going back to at least a century. In their first terms, George W. Bush signed 173, Bill Clinton 200, Ronald Reagan 213. But the numbers matter less than the scope of the ones that are signed. Mr. Obama has unilaterally deferred deportation of younger illegal immigrants, delayed enforcement of his health care law, and declined to defend legal challenges against the Defense of Marriage Act, a law barring federal recognition of same-sex marriages. Perhaps the most far-reaching are the regulations being developed to limit carbon emissions at the nation's power plants. So.
And that was Ted Cruz's point, that the numbers compared to George Bush, for example, are much lower, but the scope of what he's doing with executive action is huge.
Well, good. I mean, if you've got power, you use it.
Yeah.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we will continue, and we're going to hear NPR News, and then we'll be back and have many other issues to discuss. We welcome your input, as always. Roundtable at WAMC.org, roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll be back after the short break. Welcome back to our roundtable panel. We have a great panel here. WAMC's Alan Chartok joins us. Good morning, Alan.
Yo.
Albany journalism professor and investigative reporter Rosemary Armeo is at the head of the roundtable. And
the head of the roundtable.
Yes.
Think of that.
No, the head of the roundtable.
I've been through this already.
Yeah. Okay. And Ray Graff. Good morning. Hello. All right. So we have satisfactorily talked about the State of the Union. So let's talk about other workings in Washington. And this was something that happened earlier this week we didn't get to yesterday. And that is the Farm Bill compromise. House and Senate negotiators on Monday agreed on a new 5-year farm bill that will eliminate or consolidate dozens of agriculture subsidy programs, expand government-subsidized crop insurance, and cut about $8 billion from the food stamp program over the next decade. A bipartisan agreement 2 years after lawmakers began to work on the nearly $1 trillion bill. This one took a very, very long time.
You know, I've talked to almost every one of our rotating congressmen on Congressional Corner about the farm bill, because we have lots and lots of farmers in New York State, in Massachusetts, Connecticut. There are a lot of farmers. And they tend to be ignored way too much in terms of their needs, the rest of it. A lot of this came not only over the food stamp program, which is an anathema to many Republicans, but also, and they wanted, $40 billion in cuts, and they got, $8 billion, yeah. So they were able to show their more conservative constituents, what they were doing. But the real fight, or one of the major fights, was over the milk subsidies. Small farmers are really getting screwed by the middlemen. And so they had to come up with, because if they didn't pass this bill, we were going back to the standards, if that's what you call them, that were set really a long time ago, and it would have meant that the government had to buy back a lot of milk, which would not have been available, which would have forced up the price of milk to $8 a gallon. And it was basically, it comes down to this, agribusiness versus the big guys versus the small farmers that we have so many of around here. And in the end, it was just too unpalatable. Now, I know that the big no vote in all of this was John Boehner. And I don't fully remember what it was that Boehner was so objecting to. But I do think he was on the agribusiness side of the dial. In the end, Rosemary, I know you have some real concerns about the $8 billion in cuts.
I don't get cutting food stamps. It feeds people who need food, especially a lot of children. I would hate to be a single mother, a single parent raising children and have to do with cuts. $8 billion is the big number, but it's their monthly budget that's going to be cut.
$90 a month, basically.
Unbelievable. I mean, and food is not cheap. I can't imagine that. And how is this smart for the economy? You give food stamps and it isn't hoarded. That money's not put in the bank. It's spent immediately out in the community. It goes right back into the economy. So I don't see how that's good. You better, right. So instead, we didn't give it to the banks in this case. We gave it to sugar manufacturers. There's still supports for sugar. Why? We pay much more for sugar than any place in the whole world. Why is that still there? I think if you also look at the way this bill is structured, the cuts that are supposed to be what the other side, what the Republican conservatives gave up, actually is just a change. They've restructured crop insurance.
That's
so that
true.
There's actually more money is going to go into the same corporate giant farms.
Sure.
We have hurt people who need help in order to give support not really needed to companies. It's horrible.
It's true.
There are so many different aspects to this bill that just don't even seem, you know, it's like, how does one thing relate to the other, except that it's all under this, you know,
omnibus farm bill.
So you have the federal sugar program, as you mentioned, that is expected to be kept intact. Farm programs that include new milk insurance subsidy program and placing a cap on farm subsidy payments, that'll be included. It's expected to keep a controversial catfish inspection office at the Agriculture Department.
Yeah, that's a good one.
I have a T-shirt I got at a truck stop in South Carolina that says that. Catfish Inspection Office. Right.
Oh, my
here.
Gosh.
Oh, I hope you wear that someday. Like, yeah. Third day of the fun drive.
It's one of those filthy hats you get at the truck stops.
and the elimination of so-called direct
payments. I can't even joke
payments.
About this, you know? Yeah, I mean, these are this is like, you see these people in the supermarket, and they need these food stamps.
Okay.
It's hurting people.
Nobody has yet, and we've discussed this before, I'm sure there's a rational explanation, because there always is a rational explanation in Washington. Why is the SNAP program, why are food stamps attached to farm subsidy bills? Why can they not be separately discussed? This is the
Good
problem.
You,
the
yes.
bill is too huge. The sugar issue you mentioned, that's a big deal. We pay more for sugar than, what, any place else.
So should there be a sugar bill, a separate sugar bill?
No, but I'm saying... The farm bill—that's a part of a farm bill, don't you think?
Well, no, that's a matter of interpretation.
Food stamps,
hey,
not
hey
so.
Raymond, do you think that the Republican conference is going to raise their hand if you have a separate SNAP bill that's
wait,
not in the farm bill?
Wait, you think this is just a Republican thing?
Yeah,
yes.
I think the Democrats attached it. Conservatives have long targeted entitlement programs, and they have included food stamps among the entitlement programs.
But what confuses me about all of this, what really confuses me, is I once went to the barber. And the barber, who didn't have much, I know that, young man, rabid about all the entitlements that were being given to poor people. Every poor person was getting a cell phone, and every poor person was under, you know, these programs and doing all this stuff. But it has always made me crazy that the people who these programs are often designed for, and especially the LMC, the lower middle class community, are furious about these programs, which can only help so many people.
But that's a separate issue. The efficacy and the importance of supplemental nutritional programs, completely separate issue from farm subsidies and keeping farms alive, don't you think?
No.
Why?
Because I think politics is the art of compromise. And because I think that what happens is you would never have the Powell Amendment, for example, which forbids discrimination in educational grants. You'd never have that unless he could put it onto another bill and get it passed that way, because it's something the other side wanted. That's why it's there.
Hmm. That doesn't make sense.
It doesn't?
In other words, lumping a bunch of things that don't necessarily go together in one bill doesn't make for a plan. I mean, the farm bill's been held up for so long. Why? Because of food stamps. Cut it out. Make it a separate entity that you can negotiate later.
Okay,
let's
assume, though, following your logic, that the food stamp program, the SNAP program, could not pass if you did what you said. Now, if you're the Democrats, would you insist that it be part of something larger? And by the way, there is an argument to be made that it is agricultural, because people are using agricultural benefits.
This is from Bill Moyer's blog, and said, in my opinion, farm bills should be classified as food bills, and SNAP should continue to be part of them. Mm-hmm. Food producers and consumers are mutually dependent upon each other. When so many Americans are low income and hungry or food insecure, that limits the amount of money that they can spend on food, thus limiting income for food producers. When producers can't afford to stay on their land or face environmental threats, threats. It threatens the availability of nutritious fresh food for consumers. A true food bill would aid hungry Americans and small family farmers alike.
Okay, well, Moyers makes his point. There you go.
Yeah. Let's take a break. We'll be right back. We have other issues to discuss. We welcome you. Roundtable, WAMC.org. Roundtable, WAMC.org. We'll be right back.
Support for WAMC comes from Alacrity Frame Workshop, Albany, New York. Offering custom framing and local art in the capital region, open every day except Tuesdays, alacrityframeworkshop.com. And Eagle Hill School, Hardwick, Massachusetts, a college prep boarding and day school for students in grades 9 through 12 with learning disabilities, dyslexia, ADD, and ADHD. EHS1.org.
Welcome back to our roundtable discussion this morning. Rosemary Arimeo is here, Ray Graff and Alan Chartok, and we welcome your comments as well. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Let us talk about other action in Washington yesterday. Rosemary talked about this at the beginning of our conversation as part of the coverage of the State of the Union. The House of Representatives voted on Tuesday to impose tighter restrictions on federal payments for abortions, thrusting the issue of a woman's right to terminate a pregnancy into the polarizing politics of an election year. The bill stands no chance of being passed by the Democratic-controlled Senate, but that mattered little to members of both parties, who seemed to relish the chance to accuse their opponents of blatantly twisting the issue to their political advantage.
Yeah, it's interesting that the farm bill languished for how long before they renewed it? They went way past the date. They couldn't decide.
A couple of years.
But boy, this one, we did it on the date, just right on the date. The timing is also interesting because it came on State of the Union Day,
right,
when all attention is on the president coming into the chambers.
What exactly did it say again?
It's actually a renewal of an old law that restricts use of federal tax dollars to pay for abortions in any health programs.
Right, right.
The House vote was 227-188, mainly along party lines. Six Democrats voted yes, one Republican voted no, and another voted
yes. Okay, so let's parse this for a second. Everybody is looking at this issue. The Republicans are looking at the issue. The Democrats are looking at the issue. The Republicans seem to think, based on their polling and other things, that it has legs, that it's going to get them votes. The Democrats don't think so. Women voted in huge numbers against the Republican candidate the last time out. Now, can you separate out? I'd be interested in what Ray might have to think about.
I'm sorry.
I'd be interested in what
I was
think.
Reading High and Lowest. Could you just
No, yeah, okay. But I'd be interested in, they must be at least 95 now, High and Lowest. I'm interested in what you think is happening here politically, that the Republicans did so badly among women in the last presidential election, and yet they're going over the cliff again. I don't get it.
Legitimate rape. That's why they did so badly. I mean, they said incredibly stupid things. Fox yesterday had a panel discussing women's rights and State of the Union. Four men sitting on the panel.
Can I just read this comment from Louise Slaughter? This is in the Times article about this. This is, I thought, just a great quote. Representative Louise Slaughter, Democrat of New York, noted how the current legislation had moved through the House almost exclusively with the votes of Republican men.
Yep.
On the House Judiciary Committee, where the bill was approved 2 weeks ago, the 22 Republicans are all men. Quote, "This has been the problem for a long time. Men in blue suits and red ties determining what women should do."
The better quote is the one that follows from Charlie Dent, who is a congressman from Pennsylvania and a Republican, if you care to read that one.
Go ahead.
"I will. I've always said that we ought to avoid taking on these hot-button social issues. They don't do us any good." said Representative Charlie Dent, Republican of Pennsylvania. Mr. Dent voted for the abortion bill, but he noted how some of his colleagues were so ill-equipped to talk about women's health issues that the party leadership has had to advise its members how to approach the topic more delicately.
And, okay, the next part?
Here's my suggestion for a communication strategy for some of these guys. Four words, shut the bleep up.
Well, I guess he pretty
did he
much...
use the bleep on the floor?
I think he said bleep. Yeah.
Good advice. I told you my policy is do not discuss abortion with someone who doesn't have a uterus. I don't think I should be talking about it with you guys.
Yeah, I don't know that that's fair, though.
And then someone, yeah, someone wrote in and said, why? You know, men are part of families, too. But I don't know. I do. People keep saying, Republican friends, do you really think there's a war on women? You know, we have women in the party. We have mothers.
You know,
do you really think this is true? And I don't want to think it's true because it's so unbelievable. And yet, case after case, Ray, you know, what am I to think?
Well, there are some, I would say, there was a strategy at play, and there is a strategy at play by those partisans far left who want to paint it as a war on...
Okay, well, let's say it isn't a war on women. What is it?
I'm not sure, and I'm not saying it's not. But what I'm saying is they have framed the discussion thusly, and I would say that there are plenty of conservative women, maybe not in this room, maybe not in this state, but there are plenty who say, you know what? I'm a woman. I have a uterus. I think abortion's wrong. And so the it has been framed to some extent. In other words,
right.
If those political operatives have framed the discussion in that way.
Well, the strategy isn't working because the Republicans lost the woman's vote in the last election.
And the Hispanic vote.
Yeah.
And now, obviously, you got a guy like Boehner who's a professional politician. He understands. He certainly understands on the immigration issue, whether or not you're going to find him understanding on this. By the way, politics is an interesting game in that you either win or you lose. You don't have second place.
So the middle.
Well, there may be a middle, but middle doesn't work because
right.
if you're
you win or lose.
Yeah, if you're the women's vote. I'm taken as an aggregate, Ray. Not that there aren't some women who are,
sure.
you know,
and a sizable number,
yeah.
by the way.
Well, let's put it this way. Not when the polling came through in that last election. So you saw that women really had a problem with the Republican, you know, approach to this. And they lost.
Because they inartfully framed the discussion and also abetted by political operatives on the other side who pushed them in the direction, and the Republicans were fully capable
of digging their
own hole.
Oh, you mean the Democrats? The Democrats are now responsible for what the Republicans are saying?
No, what I'm saying is the discussion has been framed in that way. There are many idiot Republicans who will say things like, what did the guy say about rape?
That women's bodies shut down in times
okay.
of stress. So if you're raped, you can't.
There are many
pregnant.
Of them. There are also many of idiot Democrats who say stupid
no.
things too.
No, I see your point, and I do take it. The Cook brothers, very conservative Republican operatives, have formed a committee, and the idea of it is to vet candidates so that you don't get somebody.
I heard you talking about this
right.
yesterday or the other
yeah.
day.
Yes, they're not going to get these candidates who say unbelievably stupid things that cannot be supported.
Right,
and certainly the Cook brothers never do anything like that.
They're a little bit more effective than the legitimate.
Well, because
guy.
They have a lot of money to put into elections,
right.
but we
now
know where their
now
politics
using
are.
Using their money to help with the framing that Ray is talking about. I mean, let us be clear. Yes, there are many women who side with the anti-abortion. There are also many men who side with the women's choice.
Absolutely.
So this is why it's so difficult for government. There we're really split as a country, and we have more than one view. You're not just pro or con abortion. You can be, well, I don't think it's really right, and I would never do it. But I don't want my government involved in it. Where does that go?
Well,
there's
just the
a different
naming
position.
Of this. The no taxpayer funding for abortion.
Right.
Act.
Yeah.
I mean, that's
interesting.
Somebody read a poll, and that's the best way to frame it.
Yeah.
And that's what
they knew when they put this out there, it did not have a prayer of going forward. So they could name it whatever they want.
Well, exactly right.
Yeah.
Exactly
but they felt
right.
it important to do it. To
well,
do
I mean,
it,
I think
you know,
that
from a political operation
wow.
perspective, that's why they did it.
But from a principle standpoint, there would have to be, if you are actually one of those few politicians who might stand for something and stick by what you stand for without looking at polls, then I would say there is probably a person who would say, I'm going to stick, right or wrong, win or lose, I stick with my principles.
Yes, and they lose.
Well, you know.
Or their party loses.
Maybe there's a special place in heaven for the losers who stuck to their guns.
And they make many of us think there is a war on women.
But is that not the goal of politics, to drive a wedge between people, to say there is a war on women? There are conservatives, and frankly, all the conservatives I know, they love women. There's not a war on women. This is not a war on. In other words, it is framed that. The wedge has been driven. A sledgehammer has been hit into the wedge to divide people. And that's why politics stinks.
Okay, so Steve Lewis wrote, Rosemary Armijo's unqualified reference to Ted Cruz's charge against President Obama, in other words, he doesn't compromise, was a little surprising, edging up on shocking, since it is well documented how Mr. Cruz has repeatedly lied in public pronouncements, and it is equally well documented how the president has attempted to compromise with the GOP since he took office. In several instances, Mr. Obama has even offered to get behind some former Republican positions and has been soundly rebuked.
And we got a couple of other letters. Ron writes, the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program is a program of the Department of Agriculture. Before SNAP, it was food stamps, and before that, surplus food, where recipients actually received a prescribed assortment of food products, cheese, flour, canned vegetables, et cetera, which were surplus foods that the USDA had bought in connection with some of its agriculture programs. Logic might very well dictate that it now be separated from the Farm Bill, but originally was very logical.
That's a good letter. Thank
you. We also got this note from Joel, who says 102,678 abortions performed in New York State, reported by the New York State Department of Health in 2011. I believe in pro-choice, but this number is completely horrible. And we also,
I don't know if it's accurate, but
yeah, I don't know if that
the number of abortions in the country are way down. So I don't know about the accuracy of the number. I agree with you. That's horrible. And if we had better education on contraceptives, perhaps it would be
the
longer.
Morning after pill doesn't count as an abortion, right?
Yes, it does.
It does.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Also, Jean says Ray is not correct that the Republicans have a problem with poor phrasing. If they bothered to ask women, they'd realize that women want to make their own health-related decisions without having a bunch of white men in blue suits decide for them.
All right. That
yes,
is exactly,
good letter.
That's exactly what the Slaughter said.
Why can men
that?
Make decisions about using erectile dysfunction drugs after consulting with their doctors, but women need congressional representatives to help them decide about birth control?
You go,
or abortion.
Girl. Yes.
All right. We have about 5 minutes left, and I want to get to this story. This was something. It was an editorial in today's New York Post, and I bring it up for two reasons. One is because of what it said, and also because we got some letters even that indicated that they felt some of NPR's coverage was a little was on this same tone as well, and that is the death of Pete Seeger, who we lost Monday night at the age of 84.
No,
94. Excuse me, 94. And so they say in this, if I had a hammer, take that song today. It is admired as a call to justice. In fact, it was written for a 1949 testimonial dinner for top leaders of the U.S. Communist Party, then on trial for advocating the violent overthrow of our government. Such facts are missing from the tributes to the former Communist Party member who died Monday. President Obama, for example, hailed him as an American tuning fork, while Mayor de Blasio urged everyone to sing a song for justice. And yes, he protested U.S. involvement in Vietnam, but he refused to join fellow singer Joan Baez in protesting the terrible abuses there after the communists won. However brilliant a musical artist Pete Seeger may have been, honesty requires acknowledging that America's national treasure was a tarnished gem.
And it takes the New York Post to be honest, the Fox people to be honest. It's disgusting. I mean, that is really disgusting. I mean, there is a general sense. All this information was well known, by the way. And I believe that in his own way, Pete has acknowledged that he made some bad mistakes and wrote a song about just Joe Stalin, and said to me on the secret tapes that we have, said to me that he would never support a person like that again. So yes, I mean, all of us have made mistakes in life. I think he did. I think he acknowledged it. And there's nothing like The New York Post to kick a guy the day after he died.
I don't have any problem with setting the record straight. He was not my friend, so I don't feel like it's disgusting as you do, Alan. But what difference does it make? It was part of his history. He was a man looking for a different way. That our government didn't work. He was looking for something else, and so he did try the Communist Party, as did many smart intellectual men at that time and women.
And a lot of people stood up,
right?
Took a deep breath when we saw him with Obama at the inauguration, or getting the presidential, Kennedy honor. Things change in this world.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
We are out of time, but I thank you very much for joining us this morning. You can email us, roundtable@wamc.org, roundtable@wamc.org.
What?
Please wait till the flight has landed before you undo your seatbelt.
Can I put my tray up?
Yes. roundtable@wamc.org. Panel, thank you very much.
Thanks, Joe.
Thank you, Joe.
We'll talk tomorrow. You're listening to the Roundtable on WAMC.